Blog Talk Radio.
Special edition of Let's Talk Fort Worth. I'm Carrie Hines, your host. This show is being done tonight out of our regular rotation due to our guests not being available tomorrow night, and we thought this show was too important to postpone for another week. A reminder, we do not own the rights to the music you just heard. Also, please click tag and share. Tell someone Let's Talk Fort Worth is on the air, and some very important information is about to be revealed. Our topic tonight is who's watching Tarrant County judges. Our guest is Edward Brown, a journalist with the Fort Worth Weekly. His reporting is revealing some mishandling of at least 160 cases in Tarrant County. Edward Brown says there are men and women in prison right now who are victims of a fraud on the part of multiple judges in Tarrant County, all documented. Tonight, he says he's coming with receipts. So before we begin, a disclaimer. The views and opinions of our guests do not necessarily reflect that of Let's Talk Fort Worth, the host, or any advertisers. With that said, Let's Talk Fort Worth. Ladies and gentlemen, I introduce to the Let's Talk Fort Worth audience for the very first time, Edward Brown, a journalist with the Fort Worth Weekly. Good evening. Edward, how are you?
Doing very well. I'm excited to talk about this topic with you.
Wonderful. Tell us a little bit about Edward and your career as a journalist.
So my primary outlet is through the Fort Worth Weekly Newspaper. I've been working for them for the better part of 12, 13 years. I started off doing reviews and kind of found a passion for news reporting. At the time, the editor, Gail Reeves, who now heads the Texas Observer, is a Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist. So I was able to learn a lot for several years working under her. And our current editor, Anthony Mariani, is an incredible editor as well. And he has done a good job of prioritizing local news through the weekly, especially the kind of really kind of gritty, deep dive investigative stuff that we specialize in.
Wonderful. So tell us, how did you stumble on this story?
That's a good question. I was thinking about that right before the show started because it was a process. And I'll just say, because our topic today is judicial misconduct, there's no book out there. There's no document that says look for X, Y, and Z when you're looking for inappropriate actions by judges. And it's, that appears to be by design. And as I was going through this process, I was finding out that basically no one will answer your questions when you start raising questions about judges. They're the one elected or appointed official that seems to be hands-off. And so the State Commission on Judicial Conduct will not comment. If you have basic questions on, I've observed X, Y, and Z, is that misconduct, they will not comment on it. The Supreme Court will not comment on it. I even found that a lot of law schools that I reached out to didn't return my phone calls. So that part was kind of interesting just to find out how hard it is to learn when these judges are acting inappropriately. And that's been a process. Backing up, this all started earlier this year. I was following the case of the trial in Tarrant County of a former justice of the peace, longtime justice of the peace, named Jackie Wright. And her case was interesting. But what that led to was I noticed that this I started to look at this listing of judges. I noticed that, Darrell Coffey was not listed as a senior judge on this public document. I wasn't quite sure what senior judge meant. So I started doing some digging. I had help from a gentleman in Austin who's kind of an expert in this field. And came to the conclusion that being a senior judge, as we'll talk about tonight, is very important because only senior judges among the retired judges are allowed to preside over cases. And I'll be glad to kind of dig into that. But again, it was a process because I didn't know what this meant. No one would answer my questions when I would call and ask. So eventually, at some point, I figured out that Darrell Coffey was not a senior judge because I reached out to the Supreme Court asking for documents that would show he has this status, and they said he never applied to be a senior judge. So that was pretty clear. And also, it was interesting because I also noticed that on the public documents, he was listed as a non-senior judge. But when we finally got a hold of these kind of rare documents called order of assignment, these are things that people normally would never see. I'm sure even a lot of attorneys do not know these documents exist. For every case, criminal case that comes into Tarrant County, at least with the through Judge Evans, who we'll talk about, there has to be an order of assignment to have a judge assigned to a court. So we have a visiting judge, so to speak. So I noticed that on that document, when we finally found that, he's listed as a senior judge. So my first question was, well, why is David Evans listing Coffey as a senior judge? When it's clear that he's not. And that kind of began the deeper understanding of the significance of this and also the significance of the efforts that were done to give this gentleman a false title and what that meant. So that's the best overview I can give you.
I appreciate that. So I saw your article mention Jacqueline Rice. She was a former Justice of the Peace. Can you tell us a little bit about her story and what drew you into her story to start watching things more closely?
Yeah, I'm glad you asked that question. That could be its own episode. What struck me about her case was that it was a what appeared to be a kind of a politically motivated hit job, you know, we would say, from the county and the district attorney's office. And basically, the story is she had a homestead exemption on the wrong house in 2018, if I remember the year correctly. And she has a couple homes. So she found the error, paid the amount, corrected the situation, and then a couple months later was indicted on felony charges for something that is not a criminal charge. So it's a civil matter. If you have a homestead exemption that's, on the wrong house, the Tarrant Appraisal District will ask you to pay back money. Though you have to pay it back, but it's a civil matter. They don't come and arrest you. But in Jackie's case, they did, and that just struck me, especially after I kind of learned about her career. And and she would say, she got on the wrong side of the Johnson family. This is our commissioner, J.D. Johnson, and former constable Jody, who ran and failed to take his father's seat. And that family has its own history, because we've written maybe 20 articles about, misuse of government property and all these things. So with that in mind, it became very clear that the criminal justice system had targeted Jackie, eventually charged her with falsifying a government document, even though she never touched this document. It was a real stretch what the prosecutors were doing. And again, it just struck me as very odd. And the ironic thing is, this whole journey started with allegations that Jackie falsified documents, which she didn't. But these judges who were involved in her case appear to have falsified hundreds of documents. And the more I dig, the more I'm finding that these judges in Tarrant County are playing fast and loose with government documents when it serves their interests.
So wasn't it coffee that was on Jackie's case?
Correct. It was supposed to be Judge Catalano, who's a district judge. It's unclear why Catalano asked coffee to fill in. And that's one thing I really would like to find out. I think eventually I will find that out. But this retired judge shows up. I don't think she was familiar with, who he was. I was at the trial for 3 days. I know it very well. He seemed fine. During the court proceedings, he seemed like he was a normal judge. He did appear to be doing a good job. It was only afterward that we realized he should not have been in that court and should not have been on any court.
Well, okay. First of all, I'm confused with what you just said. You said the trial was 3 days long for a homestead exemption error?
Correct. So, So Tarrant County has never prosecuted someone for not having an accurate homestead exemption. That's something, and it is odd, right? Why would you go to trial? She's been under indictment for 4 years. Go to trial, 3 day, if I remember right, trial for something that we know happens tens of thousands of times in Tarrant County, because I researched that as well. It's not that it's okay, and we should always be honest with our homestead exemptions, and it is a problem, but it's not a criminal matter. And to criminalize something really struck me as odd, and given her the political enemies that she had made in Tarrant County, that the whole thing just was very, very disconcerting, to say the least.
So what was the verdict on her?
Well, unfortunately, she was found guilty. She's appealing the case. She has a good chance of overturning the case because Darrell Coffey was not a senior judge, and he did not file his oath of office for that trial, which is a separate issue. I was surprised. I just couldn't imagine a jury, finding someone guilty of government tampering with the government documents, which is a felony for something that happens so often. And it was also something that the witnesses from Tarrant Appraisal District said that they had never seen prosecuted before, because of course it's not. This was an unprecedented action by the DA's office.
gotcha. So was there, what was the sentence for her? And we're going to move on from this. I'm feeling like I'm in total disbelief on this. So what was her sentence for them?
Sure. Well, she's appealing right now, so I might get the numbers wrong. I'll be close, but Daryl Coffey, there was a fine. She had to write a 50, I remember right, I might be, a 50-page apology letter. Yeah, and a couple of days in county jail, which she won't have to do because she's on it. She's appealing the case. So it's not like she's in prison, of course, because she had no criminal record before. She's an elderly woman taking care of a husband's disabilities. But you know, that being said, I think it's fair to say it's wrecked her life. She has to now, you know, fight this appeal process, which is very expensive. You know, she has this conviction over her that she's never had before. All that stuff, I know from talking to her, has been very stressful for her. But she's a strong person. She is fighting.
And the reason I'm stressing her case, y'all, is because she didn't find out until, if I remember your article correctly, the day before or the day of that he was the judge.
Correct.
And then they found out at a later time that he wasn't even supposed to be sitting on the bench because he was a retired judge who hadn't taken the oath again.
Correct. And they are supposed to notify defendants. I'll read this order of assignments. If time permits, give notice of this assignment to each attorney representing a party to a case that is to be heard in whole or in part by the assigned judge. So David Evans did not follow his own policy by alerting Jackie's attorney. And one possibility is that when you don't know you have a retired judge coming, you don't have time to understand the implications of that. Because retired judges, it's a whole different ballgame than active judges. And there's a lot of ways that retired judges can make mistakes that disqualify them for presiding over defendants for a number of reasons that we'll kind of touch on today.
Let's touch on it now. So let's get an understanding of what's the issue that the people need to really be focusing on. If you are a retired judge, then what is the protocol that is supposed to be followed?
Okay, that's a great question. So I'll start by saying that retired judges are used a surprisingly high amount, at least in Tarrant County. And I believe they're helping speed up, catch up on cases, because as you know, the criminal courts are backed up. There's a lot of cases. Daryl Coffey had over 200 assignments over several years, which is quite a bit, you know what I mean, for one retired judge. And then, of course, in Tarrant County, we have dozens of retired judges. So this is something that will affect a lot of defendants in civil, family, and criminal courts. And you deserve to be notified that you have a retired judge. That's something that is ordered, you know, through the this region. And then once you have your once you know you have a retired judge, you can have your attorney ask that judge if he or she has filed their oath of office. And I'll try to explain this very quickly. So the oath of office is what empowers a judge to deprive people of liberty or property. It's a very powerful thing. If it's not properly filed, the case can be overturned on appeal. And retired judges, the oath from their active office is dead. So imagine you're a judge and you're reelected every 4 years. So what do? Every 4 years, you take your oath again. The reason is that the oath doesn't just live forever, right? The president of the United States takes the oath of office when reelected, because that oath expires on the term that it's after your term ends. So retired judges are kind of in a unique situation. They don't have an oath of office to kind of carry around with them. They also don't have a home court, whereas, you know, your typical judge will have a courtroom. He or she takes the oath, works in that courtroom for 4 years. So, of course, that oath continues through the 4 years. Retired judges are different. And so, historically, they were supposed to file their oath of office with each assignment. And that's mandated by the Constitution, Article 16 of the United States Constitution says that before beginning the, you know, performing your duties, you must take the oath of office, Article 16. So to answer your question, they need to ask if the judge has filed his or her oath of office, and that can help on the appeal side, because a lot of these things, unfortunately, can't be fixed except through appeal. You can't, even if you, even if your judge says he has not taken the oath of office, that actually doesn't give you a free pass to overturn that case. You have to, it's only on appeal you can address that. And then the other thing you can ask for is verifying that they're a senior judge. And to do that, you have to contact, it's a little complicated, unfortunately, but to actually verify if they have qualified as a senior judge, you have to file a Rule 12 request with the Texas Supreme Court and ask for those documents. David Evans, you can also ask our administrator, David Evans, for those documents as well. So there's, again, two sides.
But surely if you ask a judge, you know, have you taken your oath, he's not going to lie to you and say that he had if he hasn't, right?
Well, I mean, maybe not verbally. That would be kind of risky, right? But a lot of these judges are doing things that can be seen as being dishonest. And I think, you know, the fact that they're not being told about their – that these retired judges are coming are kind of helping cover up everything. So, but yes, you have to – that's a question you have to bring up in court, find out if they've, you know, filed their oath or not. And then subsequently, if you lose and you need to appeal the case, definitely find out if they are senior judge. Those are two ways to overturn cases.
I saw in your article, in one of your articles, you mentioned something about defendant Lee Smith and how that same thing happened to him and that Coffey was presiding over his case. However, his attorney failed to challenge that, and then now Mr. Smith is facing 75 years or was convicted and got 75 years. Is that correct?
Yes, and what happened is a couple things happened that kind of railroaded that appeal. One, it was not known at the time, just from reading the documents. I've read the full, you know, appeal from Mr. Smith. He did not know that Darrell Coffey was not a senior judge. That's something that's fairly just not very well known, that the whole concept of senior judge. He also he tried to argue that Darrell Coffey did not take his oath of office, which is true for that case. Mm-hmm. But the judges in that appellate court decision said that Mr. Smith had to bring that up during trial for it to be heard on appeal. It appears that it was basically a very disingenuous thing that the Court of Appeals did, because the appellate court, I should say, because if he had appealed that to the Criminal Court of Appeals, which is the highest court in the land, they actually would have, you know, overturned the ruling based on that. So it appears that a lot of these middle appellate courts, they're designed to kind of block valid arguments, you know, against the qualifications of retired judges. That's how it appears right now.
Okay, so let's be clear. We're in court.
Yeah.
I'm the defendant. You're Judge Coffey, and you're the presiding judge, and you're retired, and you have not taken your oath of office to be sitting on the bench at the time. My attorney, on my behalf, is supposed to ask you, Judge Coffey, have you taken your oath of office? During the court proceedings, or is this something done behind the scenes, or is this something done in court?
So that's a very good question. Because I'm not an attorney, specifically how that's addressed, at what point, but it has to be on the record. It has to be something that's recorded in the course of the trial, and I would assume it'd be something that'd be at the beginning. It can't just be a backroom conversation. It has to be done in the courtroom where it's recorded by a court reporter. And once it's brought up, it's officially part of the court record and later on can be used. So, yes, that's a question an attorney would know specifically, but there definitely is an appropriate way for an attorney to bring that up at the beginning of a trial.
Okay. So if I'm understanding you correctly to say, if that does not happen, Then if I find out at a later time that he was, you know, or is brought up at a later time, it's not going to be reversed, or I'm going to fail on my appeal because I didn't bring it up at the time of trial.
So it's interesting. You do have to bring it up, but the most important thing is whether the judge has taken the oath or not. That's really the deciding factor, because at the ultimate level, and it's a long process, at the ultimate level, it will eventually be overturned, because a judge has to be constitutionally qualified to preside over a case. Now, again, you know, the Smith case was interesting, because after reading it, it appears that the attorney defending Smith and Smith didn't quite understand when they gave the appellate judges said that you didn't bring this up in court, too late. It appears that they were misleading the defendant and just trying to kind of make the problem go away. So there's a Court of Criminal Appeal ruling. If folks want to, I encourage people to, you know, look this stuff up and, educate yourself on this, because these court rulings are, you can publicly find them. You just Google the names. Prieto bail bond is one that people need to be aware of. I'll make sure I get the spelling right. It's a Texas Court of Criminal Appeal ruling, which is the highest court in the land. It's on par with the Supreme Court, right? We have two courts at the top. And this ruling, what happened was there was this judge, this retired judge, who had not taken his oath. So it's called Prieto Bail Bonds v. State, P-R-I-E-T-O. And the court ruled that this judge, this retired judge ruling would be reversed because that judge, after retiring, never took his oath of office again. And they lay out very clearly, you know, in clear language, that the oath of office dies when your term ends. So as a retired judge, you don't have a magic oath to just kind of carry around. You have to take your oath again after retirement. This judge did not. And because he did not, which is, you know, similar to a lot of retired judges, what they're doing, you know, on a regular basis in Tarrant County, because he did not take his oath of office, his ruling was overturned. But it took an appeal all the way to the top to get that reversal. But what's so important about that is because that ruling is precedent, right? It's like our United States Supreme Court ruling on something. It has incredible weight. And you can quote that, and anyone who argues that it's okay for a judge to not take their oath, they're contradicting the Court of Criminal Appeals if they try to say that.
Okay, let's talk about what's the motivation for a retired judge not to take the oath.
A couple things. One, I mean, if we're just, you know, trying to think, just as like a thought experiment, because, you know, I don't have any retired judges who are going to, you know, spill the beans on their job. But there's a couple things that could reasonably be said to be a motivating factor. On one level, you know, if you're going to take the oath of office for each case as a retired judge, you're going to be taking it quite a number of times. And whereas as an active judge, they were used to taking it once every 4 years. You have to take the two-part oath. You have to file it. You know, it's a little bit of paperwork, and it's probably easier just not to do it, especially if you're doing – I'm not saying it's acceptable, but if you're doing 20 cases a year, it's probably easier just to, you know, to not do it and just understand that most people won't know that you're doing something wrong. An even more important aspect of this is that the way Texas's retirement system is set up for judges, and I've read this code. If you file the oath of office as a retired judge, it actually pauses your retirement.
Whoa.
And the reasoning is, if you're a retired judge, you're taking in income. Filing your oath of office, taking on another assignment where you're going to make about $500 a day, which they do, constitutes going back to work, right? And so the state of Texas doesn't want judges, at least based on what I've read, they don't want judges double dipping, where they're pulling retirement, going back to work, making extra money basically like an active judge. They're getting paid. They're doing everything they did as an active judge, Maybe it's, I'm trying to think of another example. I won't go into other examples, but so, you know, their coffee made about $500, you know, maybe $450, you know, dollars a day, because they're paid on par with the judges they're subbing for, right? That's a lot of money. I mean, it could be hundreds of thousands of dollars extra money you're making over, you know, several years of retirement while pulling in retirement. But, you know, back to that point, if they did do what they're supposed to do and follow their oath of office with each new assignment, that would pause the retirement system automatically flags it. When you file an oath as a retired judge, that's a clear sign you're going back to work. So by not filing that oath, they're able to circumvent that and to make extra money. It's also kind of a good deal for the active judges. And it's important to remember, if you think the stuff that, you know, we're describing is unethical, the active judges are culpable in it as well. So if I, as an active judge, bring in my friend and, you know, my retired judge friend, I still get paid, right? So they're filling my docket. They're overseeing my cases. Doesn't affect my salary. I'm just, you know, skipping work for a couple of days. You know, I've looked over, you know, these forms that these judges file in Tarrant County. Sometimes they're taking time off for reasons that really are not acceptable, right? So they're going to, you know, do a speech. You know, there was one judge that, you know, wanted to make a speech at a police event because he's a former police officer. And he said, so he had Daryl Coffey fill in. You know, he's still getting paid for that day. Daryl Coffey's making extra money. But it's not really a reason for a judge to take the day off, especially when you think about someone who's standing trial. You show up to a trial, you expect that judge to be qualified and honest. Your life's on the line. You could be going to jail or prison, and it could be seen as being kind of flippant to just have your buddies, you know, fill in for you so they can make some extra money. But yeah,
I think one of the things that struck me in reading up on this was that everybody knows the trial of the century will be the Aaron Dean, the Tatiana Jefferson trial, and we understand the same judge Daryl Coffey was asked by Judge Hagerman to sit in for several months. Basically, he was going to have him, if I'm understanding you correctly, he was going to be like January, February, April, in August of 2021, and then January, February, and June of 2022, which we know a Tatiana Jefferson's trial could have potentially started had everything gone as planned during that time period. So I'm bringing this one up because had Aaron Dean been found guilty, he could have then used as an escape an appeal because Judge Coffey had not taken the oath, so therefore shouldn't have been sitting on the bench anyway, and so therefore he would have gotten a new trial. Am I correct?
Yeah, you're absolutely correct. These are concerns that we reported on, and I wish more people knew about it. So he Hagerman requested Coffey in June, which is the same month, that the original trial was going to take place. I don't know if Coffey was going to be assigned to the case, but it was kind of, that kind of was a red flag when I saw that. It's also interesting, Hagerman was taking a week off for this conference. That's one of the reasons he asked for Daryl Coffey. And it was this really kind of fancy conference where there was going to be, you know, wining and dining. And it turned out to be, I don't know if he ever went to the conference, but he requested to, and that was the week before the trial. So it is the trial of the century. For Tarrant County, it's probably the most important trial we've ever had, maybe ever will have. And Hagerman was all too happy to go wine and dine at this event the week before the trial. You think he'd be preparing for it. But that's kind of a separate issue. I will say that Lee Gabriel, she is she's a retired judge. She presided over the recusal of Hagerman, and so that's what led to it being reassigned to Gallagher. Lee Gabriel did not sign her oath of file her oath of office for that recusal motion. So there's
Wait, pause. Listen, hit the brakes. So did I just hear you say that one of the rulings that has taken place in Aaron D's cases, I mean, or whatever you call these hearings, the judge did not take the proper oath to have made that ruling?
Correct. The Secretary of State, through our request, said that there was no oath filed at the time period that she would have had to file to be constitutionally qualified for that recusal. I've had one legal expert say in that situation, the recusal never happened. And anytime a judge makes a decision that's not valid or, you know, that's not, you know, they're not constitutionally qualified for something, the action is invalid. So one could argue that legally Hagerman's still the judge. Until there's a legal recusal that you know, by a judge who's constitutionally qualified, one could argue that the recusal never happened.
Okay, I'm going to pump the brakes one more time. You need to go call your friends, your neighbors, your coworkers, and tell them to get on the phone, get on the computer, check out the show, because he is dropping bombs, and he's coming with receipts. So the trial of the century, in which we just saw all over the news that Judge Hagerman was recused on the Aaron Dean trial, you're seeing that the judge that ruled on that is a retired judge who had not taken the proper oath. I'm sorry?
Correct. Yes, you're correct.
So therefore, I'm sorry?
Oh, I'm just saying you're correct. Yeah, you're absolutely correct.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. So therefore, the recusal that we all know allegedly took place, didn't really take place, and that Hagerman may officially still be the judge on this particular case. I think y'all better call it to Fox 4, WFAA, call them all. That's crazy. That is probably something, the biggest kept secret known to man, because everybody felt like that thing kind of went down kind of strange, but nobody really knew, like, how could he be recused when really they didn't find him guilty of doing anything, really. But, oh, my God, the lights just blinked for me.
It gets better, actually. The judge who assigned Lee Gabriel to the recusal, it appears, and this is based on the Secretary – I always reach out to the Secretary of State. So they're the ones who keep these oaths on file, right? So the oaths do not count until they're filed with the Secretary of State. So the Secretary of State – and this is our next article coming out – said that David Evans did not take his oath of office for his reappointment right before he assigned Lee Gabriel. So if that's correct, and I'm basing that off the Secretary of State's statement – you have a constitutionally unqualified judge assigning a constitutionally unqualified judge to the recusal. So,
And no, listen, and you just tuned in. You're listening to Let's Talk Fort Worth. I'm Carrie Hines, your host. Our guest tonight is Edward Brown, a journalist with the Fort Worth Weekly. Edward says there are men and women in prison right now who are victims of fraud on the part of multiple judges here in Tarrant County, all documented. So if you have a question or a comment tonight, call in at 515-605-9321, then press 1 when connected. Now, listen, did you just hear what he said? So none of this stuff that we've recently seen concerning the Aaron Dean trial is really legal. I'm just saying, y'all, that's crazy. And I hope it's on the news tomorrow night. I mean, or tonight, tomorrow. Oh, my God. So why haven't you all broke that story? Edward?
That is probably posted. That the last thing I just said, we're going to post that tonight or tomorrow. I've turned in the draft. We just got all the documents together for that. But, yes, so David Evans, he asserts that he's followed his oath, but the Secretary of State says he has not. So I want to kind of, you know, one problem this could lead to with the Aaron Dean trial is, let's say Aaron Dean's found guilty. So this opens up pathways for his attorneys to overturn the conviction. They could point to Lee Gabriel's recusal not being valid. They could point to David Evans' reappointment, not being valid. It just opens up a lot of avenues that really, and I'll just be frank, it's silly that we have to worry about that when these judges, all they have to do is file a piece of paper to avoid these situations. It's not hard. But I'll say again, a lot of people don't understand the process of filing oaths. They don't understand how to request these documents, the significance of all this stuff. But criminal cases have been overturned because the judge did not take their oath of office. That's happened a number of times.
I understand that Judge Coffey's wife is a very powerful woman here in the Republican arena. So is that maybe why he's getting all these passes and getting all these assignments?
Yeah, we mentioned as much in one of our articles about that, because I think it's important to mention. So she's a very influential, or at least was a very influential with the Tarrant County Republican Party. One could, theorize that, Coffey was given so many assignments because people were wanting to curry favor with his wife. So, if you're requesting, Darryl Coffey, he's making money. He's, he's overseeing, big cases, sometimes felony, district level cases. That could be seen as, getting in the good graces of his wife, which could have, political benefits if you're, running for office again.
Let's talk about her connections to the Republican Party, so people understand just how much pull she may have with the Republican Party.
Yeah, I need to look up. One time I had all that stuff because we published it in one of the articles.
I got it. Basically, he said Deborah Coffey is an active member of the Texas Federation of Republican Women, a former board member of the Fort Worth Republican Women of member of the Texas Federation of Republican Women, former board member of the Fort Worth Republican Women, and former Tarrant County Republican Precinct Chair.
Mm-hmm.
Did I get that?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Correct. That's a big, that's a big, those are big titles. That's worth noting. The same would be true if it were a Democrat judge, who had a wife who was an operative, for the Democrat Party. It's just party politics. And if you're trying to get reelected, it's nice to have connections. So.
Gotcha. Makes totally good sense. So what we're looking at, if I'm understanding and following what you're saying, that him not following the oath basically could interrupt his retirement. And so you basically would do better not to take the oath again, and therefore you would be able to keep your retirement rolling along mm-hmm. with making about $500 a day in these courtrooms.
Mm-hmm.
So that's mm-hmm. a lot of money. You're saying potential income of about maybe $100,000. So what are we seeing of a retired judge is making? So what type of retirement do you think we would have been interrupting had he taken the oath? Do we know the potential income?
Yeah. So, let's say 200 criminal cases. Most cases last more than a day. They could last 2-3 days, maybe longer. So you're looking at maybe at least on the conservative side, 400 days on the bench times 500.
Oh, wow. Wow. So there's motivation.
It's not an insignificant amount of money. There's also, I also want to mention, it's interesting, dynamic here. Darryl Coffey was a misdemeanor judge. So, in Tarrant County, we have county judges, county criminal court judges that do misdemeanors and district judges that do felonies. Felonies are more, if you're a judge, that's more prestigious, right? I mean, just to them it is. And so for Darryl Coffey, or any, county criminal court county level judge to be able to preside over a felony case is another kind of advantage of this retirement system. So think about it this way. We separate, felony judges and misdemeanor judges. There's different, there's higher standards actually for being a district judge. I think you have to have like an active law license, for instance, with the county level stuff. You just have to, it's a little bit easier threshold. And you would never as an active county judge sit on a district level as an active judge. You would never be able to just jump up to overseeing a trial where someone could be sentenced to life. But as a retired judge, you can. Does that make sense? So it's an interesting and for defendants to go ahead.
No, I said it makes perfectly good sense. One thing I also saw was that you said the failure to take the oath of office following the retirement means that he has not been constitutionally qualified to preside over any court proceedings since 2015. So literally, that many cases since 2015, he's not constitutionally qualified?
Correct. Let me read you something. There's a there's another Court of Criminal Appeal ruling that I want folks to look at. It's 1992. This one deals with the senior judge thing. And it's a situation where there was a retired judge, who did not elect to be a senior judge. Actually, he did, but not until after he oversaw this trial. And that trial verdict was reversed because he was not a senior judge. And I'm going to find this somewhere in it. It says that every trial that the judge oversaw before would have to be overturned. And that same standard should apply to Daryl Coffey. And
so how many,
I'll find that, yeah.
How many potential cases are we talking about? Is it 160 or more than 160?
Actually, it's a little over 200.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
A little bit over 200.
Oh, my God.
I want to mention – go ahead. Oh, I'm going to read this. I found this thing. I'm going to read this. Sorry, one second. We conclude that Judge Adder, although otherwise eligible for senior status, was not qualified to be assigned to accept assignment prior to July 18, 1992, when he made the statutorily required election, and that all actions taken by Judge Adder prior to that date are therefore null and void. So what it's saying is any action that judge took before being given the title of senior judge, of properly being given the title of senior judge, are null and void. And, one reason this case, I really want the public to understand it. That's why I appreciate your time. It's because it wasn't just an accident. It wasn't just that someone, misfiled some paperwork. He intended to be a senior judge. There were a lot of people who understood that he wasn't a senior judge and helped to cover up for that. And it was done for money-making purposes. And so these citizens were deprived of their constitutional right to due process. Whenever we go to trial, we assume that we have certain rights. And one of those rights is to have a free and fair trial, which means that you have a judge who's qualified, among other things, right? And so all these people were deprived of their constitutional rights, possibly some civil rights. And it wasn't, it was not an accident. I want to talk about these public disclosures because David Evans, who's the – I've mentioned his name, but he's the administrator. He's the top judge, presiding judge of the 8th Administrative Judicial Region, which encompasses North Texas. All the courts in North Texas fall under him. And he puts together lists every year of retired judges who are eligible for assignment. And so it's a very public document, and it's public because judges who want to, you know, they need a list of, you know, who's eligible, which retired judges are eligible to come sit on my bench while I'm gone. So they'll go through this website, txcourts.gov/8, not spelled out, AJR. And then on this website, if you go to the bottom, it says senior retired judges. There's a PDF. You click on that, and you have a list of judges who are eligible. And so Daryl Coffey is not a senior judge on this list, right? So why do they have to be honest? Because this is a public list. And let's say Nathan Hecht, the Supreme Court justice, you know, might be able to see this list, and he could say, wait, that person is not a senior judge, right? So there was an effort, it appears, to conceal all of this, right? And that's where you know, the nefarious aspect of this comes in, because for several years, and even more than that, all the judges who requested Daryl Coffey saw this list, right? This is a public list. That's why it's accurate. They don't want to mess this one up because they'll get caught. And so every judge who requested, dozens of judges, you know, they could see that he's not a senior judge, and they requested him anyway. Go ahead.
It says, one place in your article said, according to a spokesperson at Chief Justice Hecht's office, Coffey's request was never approved for the title senior judge, nor did Hecht's office receive any documents or communication by Coffey requesting the title of senior judge. So if that's the case, why would anything say that he was a senior judge?
So very early on, someone with David Evans' office realized that he wasn't a senior judge. And the reason I say that is because the list of, if you go back to 2015, the first year he presided as a retired judge, it never lists him as a senior judge. Coffey, in his own paperwork to the region, said that he was a senior judge. So he told David Evans that he had sent this letter to Nathan Hecht. Of course, he never sent the letter, because we know that because Nathan Hecht never received it. And this is a bit of the mystery. So at some point, you know, early into 2015, someone with the 8th Administrative Region realizes that he hasn't filed his proper paperwork, even though he said he did. And they start listing him correctly, publicly, but incorrectly, privately. And they had to list him as, again, as we know now, the senior judge privately, because only senior judges can be assigned. So it was, it wasn't a mistake. It wasn't an oversight. It was a concerted effort to kind of just cover for Coffey's disqualification.
And y'all, to be clear, in Texas, any appointed or elected public official oath of office terminates once the official term ends. So it's over. Once you're elected, once you're appointed, once you retire, it's over. So there's no just coming back and sitting on the bench without retaking the oath. Is that correct?
Correct. And absolutely. Again, if people want to read Prieto Bell Bonds, the summary, the final ruling is not that long. There's a section on it called Survival of the Oath. And they actually, not only do they reinforce the idea that the oaths do not survive the term of office, they actually call out retired judges for thinking that it does. And what they say, I'm going to paraphrase the language, they say they see no logic whereby a retired judge, you know, would not have to retake the oath of office while active judges do. So no one can argue that retired judges are more important or somehow more unique than active judges who are elected, right? No one would say that. But the fact that they are trying to skirt taking their constitution gives the appearance that they do think that they're in some kind of special standing. And I'll just, you know, add to that is there is no law, statute, attorney general opinion, appellate ruling, criminal court of appeal ruling that says retired judges have this special ability to not take the oath of office. It doesn't exist.
There's no caveat for retired judges. You said basically in the article that in an email, Coffey said he never misrepresented himself as a senior judge, and that he filed all of his oaths as required by law. So he's saying he never misrepresented himself as a senior judge, but you're saying otherwise.
Okay, so that's an interesting point. That suggests that he doesn't understand what being a senior judge means. That's how it struck me. He didn't understand that it is important. And you're not what's called a judicial officer until you elect to be a senior judge. So he absolutely, you know, he absolutely was honest in saying that I am not a senior judge. I've never purported to be a senior judge. But that probably suggests he did not understand how significant that was. Otherwise, I'd be surprised he would say that. He also stated that he takes oaths frequently. I forget the language he used. Not based on anything that was ever filed by him. So I'm not sure what oath he's referring to, but we did a thorough search and never found them. I think there are affidavits that retired judges fill when they are saying I'm eligible for this and this kind of type of assignment. And I think that is a type of oath, but it's not the oath of office. So I don't know if he was trying to say that, you know, when I swore that I'm qualified for criminal cases. In his mind, maybe he thought that was the oath of office, but the oath of office is very specific. The two-part oath, an anti-bribery statement, and the oath of office, and it has to be followed in a very specific way with the Secretary of State.
Okay, yeah, we're going to go to the phone lines in just a second. But one thing also, you said following the first story you did on Coffey on April 13th, Judge Evans canceled Coffey's assignment to the 297th District Court and transferred the job to retired Judge Moley Westfall. Really?
Yeah.
But he said it was about casual.
Yeah, I'm not quite sure. I don't remember if Evans canceled it or if Coffey requested it to be canceled, but it was canceled due to our reporting at that time. And Evans said it was due to a scheduling conflict, which I found to be misleading. And then Molly Westfall, who, of course, ran for DA and is now a retired visiting judge, fill that spot. I haven't gone back to look if, you know, if she actually did oversee that case or what happened with that. But yeah, that's what happened.
Has Molly Westfall retaken her own?
The answer is I don't know. I've got a lot of wheels spinning right now. I don't think I've gone back to look at that. One thing I am looking at right now is whether other non-senior judges have overseen cases. And there are three or four non-senior judges on the list. And so I asked for order of assignments for those judges over the past 6 months. And I do have confirmation that assignments exist. So it's too early to know whether it's another Darryl Coffey kind of situation, because they may have very recently elected to be senior judges. But that's one thing that, you know, it just never ends. Once you find out one thing, you realize that it's a systemic problem, then you look for it elsewhere, and you find another systemic problem, and you look for that elsewhere, and it just kind of builds and builds and builds.
Gotcha. Listen, again, if you just tuned in, you're listening to Let's Talk Fort Worth. I'm Carrie Hines, your host. Our guest tonight is Edward Brown, a journalist with the Fort Worth Weekly. Edward says there are men and women in prison right now who are victims of fraud on the part of multiple Tarrant County judges, all documented. If you have a question or a comment, the call-in number is 515-605-9321, then press 1. We're going to phone number 817-658. Good evening. You're on Let's Talk Fort Worth.
817-658. Hello. Okay, that person
does
not know. Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Hello.
Okay, so my son is in custody right now under Judge, his name is Jalen Rice, under Judge Hilmes, what I call is being held hostage to our corruption and within the justice system.
You're just a little muffled. Is something going on?
Can you hear me now with your phone?
That's it. Okay.
Okay. So my son is currently in custody in Green Bay. Jalen Rice being held hostage, what I call under Kim Alex. He was certified as an adult for a crime that was originally committed, an arson crime that was originally committed in June 23rd, 2020. However, he was not certified until January of 2021. Which Kim Alex certified all of his anybody who committed alleged crime during this pandemic. If you were between ages of 15 and 16, he actually everybody had a certification hearing, no matter what. So he was certified as an adult, and however, he's still in custody. He's been put on an ankle monitor. He was not even supposed to be certified, come to find out, during all of this. And every time he does suffer from a mental illness, every time he gets out, he's put on an ankle monitor, but he can't work, he can't go to school, he can't have a job. And in the news article, Footwork Weekly, he is actually – the poster shout for that occurred on August the 6th. That will be, he will be one of those children. He's one of those children. So that will be a judge that he's actually cast himself under.
So is your question what to do? What do you need to do?
So yeah, my question is who would I go through? Who do I go to complain on this? Because I guess during the audit, he's still able to be a judge.
I'll do my best to answer that. I will say the Alex Kim thing. It's something that everyone's looking at right now. So if part of the ordeal you're having to go through is through the juvenile courts, it's never been scrutinized more closely than it is right now, as I'm sure you know. Right now they're thinking about defunding the associate judges. They just did this expansive report where they found that these kids are sitting in the detention center for long periods of time. Maybe that could give you a little bit of hope is that there's a lot of scrutiny and there's a lot of, parents coming out with very similar accusations. 2-3 weeks ago, I wrote a story about Judge Kim, and one thing I learned was that the adult-child thing is interesting. Under family code, which is what Judge Kim has to work through. If you're 17 and you committed a crime when you were 16, you are a child. You're definitely not an adult. And I know that there was a complaint sent to the Commission on Judicial Conduct that alleged that a lot of 17-year-olds were sent to Tarrant County Jail unlawfully. And it was unlawful, and even in the end, Judge Kim stopped that practice. His argument, was that on the criminal side, if you don't come through his court, if you're just a 17-year-old that goes out and punches a cop, you can be tried as an adult. in Texas, the criminal law has a little bit of a conflict with the family code law. But Kim's stuff deals with family code. As far as who can you take your complaint to, right now the county is looking into this. So your commissioner at the county level, your county judge. I say normally I wouldn't say that, but I would say that right now because, again, they're actively focused on this. You know, there aren't a lot of great avenues for disciplining an elected judge, and Kim's an elected judge. But I would just follow, you know, the public scrutiny that's happening right now and try to jump on board. You know, maybe speak at the commissioner's hearing. They'll definitely, what they'll do is once you go to the commissioner's court meeting, they'll put you in touch with some people, usually, you know, GK Manius or someone with the staff or with the district attorney's office staff. They generally will at least give you some pointers as to what you can do. So I would start there.
Okay.
Does that answer
your question? Yeah, that answers my question.
Thank you.
Thank you for your time. Yeah.
So Edward, you know, in looking at all of this, are we saying that these judges did anything criminally wrong in terms of Evans? Basically, when you say, where did you say it on, that Evans was the one that was assigning him and that fact he had the knowledge that he was not, I think you said there are 160 orders of assignment where Judge Evans falsely gives Coffey the title of senior judge. So in the fact that Evans falsely gave him that title and Coffey acted as though he had the right to preside over these cases, is there anything criminally wrong with how this was handled with these judges?
Sure. I'm going to answer that question in a general sense, so I don't want to be in a position of saying so-and-so committed a crime. But I will let me just speak generally about these kinds of actions, and let's remove the people involved, you know, from what I'm about to say. If you intentionally falsify a government document, tampering with the – I should say – I know tampering is a felony because Jackie Wright was charged with that. So in tampering with a government document, of course, there has to be criminal intent. You know, can't be an accident. You did it, you know, for a specific reason. And then you can be charged, you know, I think a third-degree felony, and that's for each document. So in cases like this, in other, you know, similar cases where public officials have gone to trouble, they'll face dozens or hundreds of criminal charges for each document represents an offense. Generally speaking, bribery, you know, there's two parts. There's, I should say, quid pro quo is what you have to prove, that you're giving someone something in return for something. If judges are requesting a retired judge who's politically connected and that judge is making money off the government, there's money exchanging hands. There could be an expectation of getting something in return. Does that make sense? So I'm, you know, I'm district judge so-and-so. I invite my retired friend so-and-so. He's making, you know, $2,000 this week. You know, he's politically connected. That's what I get out of it. He gets money. Again, I'm not alleging anyone did that, but generally speaking, those are crimes. I think in New York, there was recently a bribery case brought to pretty high ranking, someone with New York City was charged with bribery, and it was a situation, I remember the prosecutor said quid pro quo, you know, this for that, that's all you have to prove, and, you know, this official accepted money for a campaign purpose with the expressed, with the express understanding that the person donating would get something, and it's usually the hard part is proving the what you're going to get in return, right? I can give an official $1 million donation. That's not illegal, but usually that official doesn't say, because you gave me this money, I'm going to build you a new street, right? So that's where it gets kind of difficult, is proving the intent. If those falsified documents were mailed, or I should say if any falsified documents are mailed in general, that's mail fraud. So I think those three kind of come to mind.
Oh my God.
But I'm not specifying anything in Tarrant County. I'm just speaking generally.
You know, one thing that comes to mind is that the taxpayers are footing the bill for all of this. And so if all of these cases are, have the potential to be appealed, then you have all of the money that the taxpayers have already, you know, paid for in terms of the judges pay, the DA's pay, the employees of the court. You know, you're talking about all the money that has spent to be, you know, that we jailed these people. And then to go back and in many cases and have to retry these cases. This is going to be like millions of dollars if this powder keg blows I got wrong.
Yeah, so there's a clear interest in ignoring this problem. And this is, you know, this is something that, you know, was well known among judges. The district attorney's office is aware of it because I've read emails that show them discussing this. I am certain that no one's going to do anything about it. And, there are human beings in prison right now who were not given a fair trial. And, you know, someone, should take ownership of what happened. But it's, you know, that's just not going to happen. I thought a lot about, you know, what are the possibilities for, what group, you know, ideally David Evans would, you know, take responsibility and correct the problem, or the district attorney's office would. But yeah, you're right. It's a huge logistical undertaking that nobody wants to do. But I would just, again, remind folks that the people we're talking about, these defendants, are human beings. And someone made a lot of money off their being stripped of their right to a free trial. So there is some accountability that needs to happen.
So if someone, let's just say, listening tonight, recognized that their loved one, their husband, their son, their daughter went through, Judge Coffey's, court, and he or she qualifies for what we've been discussing as being one of the potential people that were affected by this, what do you suggest would be the first step for them to try to get, you know, out of this or get someone to hear that they were wrong? What do you suggest they do?
Well, right now, I know someone who's working to, it's a long process, I know someone who's working to get the names of all these defendants with the intent to eventually reach out to them with information that we're talking about tonight. Anybody who has who's presided over by Darrell Coffey over the past several years, my personal thought is the first thing, they deserve to know what happened. I think at the very least, the district attorney's office or David Evans needs to notify these defendants of what happened. They can file a writ of habeas corpus. I talked to an attorney who's running for an appellate judge position. I talked to her about this situation, and she said, those people need to be given information about how to file, if they're in prison, of course, I'm talking about how to file a writ. Mm-hmm. I imagine it's a pretty straightforward, it's not easy, but it would be a pretty straightforward process once they know what happened. I don't know what the options are for someone who's already exhausted their appeal process, but I could tell just by looking at the Smith case, a lot of people didn't know a lot of information, right? I mean, a lot of people didn't know that he didn't file his oath, that he wasn't a district judge, that he wasn't a senior judge. I don't know the numbers of people who are in prison, but it's a lot because, unfortunately, by the time someone goes to trial, there's a lot of guilty verdicts, right? That's just, the nature of the criminal courts. I do know from looking, he did oversee a number of felony cases. We saw that one case where, 75-year conviction. So there's no question that there are people right now in prison or jail, 200 plus court cases. You know, there were a lot of guilty verdicts, and a lot of people spent time behind bars for that.
So on what level is the DA's office responsible for some of this? Do they have a role in this as well?
They have an ethical obligation to do the right thing at any given point in time. So if they and at this point they're well aware of what happened. And again, you know, I've read emails, you know, to Sharon Wilson, you know, from within her department, you know, keeping her up to date on our stories. I'm sure she did not like what she heard, but they are aware of what happened. They have a conviction integrity unit. I'm not sure if that would help, because what we're talking about here is not necessarily innocence, you know, with these defendants. But what we are talking about is the trial was not valid, right? You know, you understand the difference? So these people may have, you know, committed an offense or maybe not, you know, but I don't know if the conviction integrity unit would necessarily be the first avenue. But, you know, to answer your question, you know, they know about it. I think if people did the right thing, they would notify these defendants about, you know, what happened, give them another trial. I believe that the remedy for this is a retrial. In other cases, you know, they may not be worth the DA's time to retry these cases, so they may find ways to do early release or do some kind of, like they always do, you know, that's kind of their job is kind of not flooding the courts. So there's a way to do this without flooding all the courts, but, you know, the end result is these people need to be given a new trial or some kind of relief, just because what happened was just so egregious, right? It was just it's the craziest thing I've found in my, you know, 12, 13 years of reporting, by far. So,
for someone who may say, well, you know, if they're guilty and they're in jail, you know, no harm, no foul. But the truth be told, that's not true. I mean, I say necessarily true. It's not true, because if there's an injustice anywhere, there's a threat of If there's an injustice anywhere, that's a threat to justice everywhere. That's Dr. King. And so the truth be told, if we have court systems right here in Tarrant County that are intentionally moving around what they know are the rules and the protocols for a courtroom, then the trial is not legal. That's just what it is. And so they're potentially putting all the taxpayers like into huge, I mean, financial burdens of carrying these cases and then possibly having to retry these cases simply because they chose not to tell people that, you know, they didn't take the oath again. So I don't see where anybody who's in jail and they were affected by this does not have the right to a new trial, as costly as it may be, or may be released early or whatever, because simply you cannot say ignorant to this, because you can't tell me you're a retired judge, however, you didn't know the rules. And then they're calling you back to do more cases. That's just, I just don't know if you can plead ignorance on this one. I don't know.
The criminal justice system, in order to be, you know, seen as legitimate in the eyes of the citizens, has to follow their own laws, right? If they're not abiding by their own laws and their own rules, for them to, you know, force, you know, the citizens to do the same is hypocritical. And also, I would say you have a great point. To anyone who thinks that, you know, if they're guilty, what does it matter? We have a right, a constitutional right, to a free and fair trial. And that part of that includes having judges who are qualified. That's something that's a constitutional right. And absolutely, you know, that's a pillar of our society. And that's what this really comes down to. Yeah.
I agree. Yeah, that's what I was looking for earlier. They said that Judge Coffey basically was not constitutionally or statutorily qualified to preside over these cases. So that said, if someone came through his courtroom during this period, it's just not fair. It's just like basically withholding evidence and you know, not presenting evidence that could have freed somebody. So I just think, in my opinion, that if it's all about someone did not want to give up their retirement pay in order to make some extra money, and so therefore they decided that they were not going to be totally truthful about what their status was, that I don't think that was ignorance. I think that was intentional, or would be intentional if that was the case.
Mm-hmm.
And so I know that anybody who was affected by that does not have the right to at least say, I think I was done wrong and I want a second chance at an appeal, or even if they've exhausted all of their appeals, I think they still have they should have an opportunity to appeal at this particular point based on that alone. Because you're talking about the judge.
Yeah, and prosecutors have to disclose, you know, conflicts or unethical issues through Brady disclosures. They have to do that. You know, prosecutor has to disclose anything that will help, you know, the defendant's case. But judges don't, right? There's no Brady law for judges. So absolutely, it's a different standard. And I'll just add one other thing, because these retired judges are requested by name. So your typically, let's say I'm going to the felony court, I'm going to have a judge assigned randomly in Tarrant County, which makes sense because, you know, if we're going to, you know, be on trial for something that gets sentenced to prison for life, I know that, you know, some judge isn't picking our case or has a personal vendetta against us. And so Tarrant County's website is very clear. It's assigned randomly. It's not assigned randomly for these retired judges who can also oversee felony cases, which is another really bizarre thing I found out. They are requested by name from active judges. And so the whole way that they can do that, again, you know, brings up the possibility of bribery. These are people picking their buddies to come make some extra money. And the defendants who get these judges, they don't know that this judge is there because his friend wanted to scoot his old pal some money. And so, yeah, from that point of view, I mean, I just feel like, yeah, they really need to do the right thing, I would hope, and let these defendants know what happened, give them some kind of apparatus to at least, you know, appeal their case or, you know, better yet, retry their case. That would be something that could restore faith in our criminal justice system. I know you cover a lot of criminal justice stuff. Wouldn't that go a long way to, you know, restoring faith in the people who, you know, are judges?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Let me ask, so if you are a defense attorney and you had knowledge of this, why do you think that I think you said something in your article that some of them are afraid to say anything because they are under the fear that they may be blackballed from being able to get cases?
Correct. So there's a couple layers to this. The biggest one is indigent defense appointment. So judges, even though they're supposed to assign it randomly, they really rarely, or at least, you know, they appear to rarely do that. So a lot of defense attorneys make a fair amount of money defending indigent defendants who couldn't afford, you know, cannot afford an attorney, and they're paid directly from the county. And if you do a lot of that, it's not bad money. But if you get on the bad side of the judge, you can imagine that very quickly, you know, those appointments would dry up. I've also heard that, you know, the judges, you know, they're people. You know, they can be vindictive. They can make your life, if you're a defense attorney, hell, right? If they don't like you, there's a person, they got something. They can do a lot of things to make your job hard in the courtroom, and there's not a lot you can do to stop that. So there are a lot of reasons why attorneys, especially active, you know, defense attorneys, refuse to talk to me about anything that we report on. But you know, someone has to be honest about what's happening in our criminal justice system. So that's where the Fourth Weekly comes in.
I agree. Y'all done a great job. We're going to go back to the phone lines. We're going to go to 804. 258. Good evening. You're on West Talk 41.
Hi, I'm Sarah. I've been listening in tonight.
Hi, Sarah.
I love Edward. He's been very great about exposing what's going on in Tarrant County and has talked a lot about the criminal system. I just wanted to comment a little bit on what he said about retired judges coming in and not having the jurisdiction to make the decisions that they're making. I know that he was speaking mostly about the criminal court, trying to bring up the family court situation with the judges in Tarrant County. There are a lot of children who are in very bad positions and a lot of danger, a lot of children who have been hurt. And judges are coming in and covering for other judges. Say Randy Catterton, I don't know if you guys remember him. He was a judge back in 2016, I believe.
Okay.
He has been brought in to overhear cases as late as into 2019 by Patricia Bennett anytime she doesn't want to touch it. Or there's a judge that I like to say where cases go to die. Basically, if there's aggravated perjury, any type of child harm, even that of a more sexual nature with hospital records backing it up, those cases are going into Judith Wells Court to die. And those children never get any relief. Those parents never get any relief. And it is compounded aggravated perjury, which is technically a felony and should be a criminal matter, that is being hidden and held in these private courtrooms with just a judge and no jury. And I feel like that is one of the biggest issues we have in Tarrant County, is what's happening to our children behind closed doors and how there's absolutely no enforcement on the actual Texas statute or on the requirements of judges to uphold and enforce the law.
Those are great points, Sarah.
Wow. Thank you for
it's so big. I don't know if anybody's going to look into it, but I'll get off. I'm not as good a speaker as he is.
We're going to talk about family. I'll talk about family courts for a couple of minutes now.
I just want to bring up one more point before you take over. The commissioner's meeting, because I feel like this is the most public, acknowledged, everybody in Tarrant County should have seen this commissioner's meeting. A couple months ago, Sharon Wilson, because a lot of these things that are happening in family courts are criminal matters where children are being assaulted and passed around. We'll use that word. The commissioner's court requested that Sharon Wilson make a statement as to why all these complaints are happening and why she's not arresting anyone. She went up front in front of the commissioner's court and stated that she had thoroughly investigated each one of these cases, and each one it was a child of sexual harm with hospital records, with blatant evidence, and stated that nothing illegal happened and that every single person who made a complaint was blatantly lying. And then it was followed by three parents who described the sexual abuse on their children, the ongoing sexual abuse on their children, and no one's done anything about it. That was a couple months ago. There's still been no arrests made, no investigations. Those children are still being held by a pedophile. And three separate parents who were brave enough to speak in open court in front of the commissioners. And I don't know what we need to do. I don't know how to change it. I've spent years and years and years gathering evidence, and nobody will do anything about it. And I know that's not the focus of this show, but I know that we all care
related.
About our children.
No,
yeah.
It's related. These are judges.
Thank you so much for letting me mention it. I appreciate it.
Thank you for calling in tonight, Sarah. She made some good points, Edward.
So, yeah, each court system's similar but different. I will mention that Judith Wells signed at least several of these coffee assignments. So apparently she filled in for David Evans. I guess she's kind of his preferred substitute, you know, for the administrative region. But her name came up, and so, you know, she's also, you know, on the hook, so to speak, for signing Daryl Coffey. The family court stuff, I will say, I'm sure Sarah's noticed this, it is getting more public attention right now. I know there's – we wrote a cover story. We can never cover everything, but we wrote a cover story on the family court system a few weeks ago. And there's a gentleman who has a Facebook group called Larry O'Neill who's done a really good job making this a priority. And I can just say from his, you know, statements that he's getting calls from kind of nightmarish horror stories from families all over Tarrant County who have had bad experiences with the family court system. It's a system, you know, like not unlike the other court systems where the judges have so much authority that if you have a judge who's unethical, it can really cause nightmares for families or, you know, I guess, you know, potentially allow a child, unfortunately, to be abused. What Sarah said at the beginning was interesting. I don't know that retired judge specifically, but I do know, and I can say this because I've done a lot of research, that retired judges, for some reason, get assigned to, I'll just say, dirty cases. They just seem to always be brought in when there's something that the active judge doesn't want to touch. It's another element of this kind of pattern that we're seeing, you know, with retired judges, where I guess they're just brought into, I don't know if it's doing the bidding of one side or another, but they seem to oversee some really bizarre cases and make some very bizarre rulings, which, you know, it's just another.
Let me jump in there. So like Hagerman, who's typically someone who does criminal cases, was going to put Coffey, who normally does DUIs and misdemeanors, over the Atatiana Aaron Dean trial, or he would have been potentially on the calendar sometime during that cycle.
Yeah,
and could have potentially...
I want to just, because it's a good point, but I do want to clarify. I don't know for certain if, I mean, that they were within a week, right? It looked really bad. I don't know for certain that Hagerman wanted Coffey to oversee the trial, but also I can't rule it out. He was definitely requested for that part of the month, but I don't think I know that for certain. But I do know, like Jackie Wright's trial is an example, you know, maybe Rob Catalano didn't want to oversee it because it was, you know, a dirty case. There have been cases of innocent people being executed because of the signature of a retired judge. We wrote a story, if you want to look it up, called No Authority, where we talk about a lot of these really bizarre rulings of retired judges, and they let off, you know, people who commit murder. They lead to the execution of innocent people. It's really quite bizarre. And it's called No Authority, Fourth Weekly, June 22nd, if people want to kind of look into that. Yeah. But, yeah, the family court thing, you know, it's a very emotional topic. You know, I'm in the middle of a family court battle. There's a lot of layers to it. I will say that people who are wealthy in the family court system have a lot of power and a lot of sway to kind of financially destroy the other side. And there's definitely an interesting system where family court lawyers are making a lot of money in some cases, hundreds of thousands of dollars just based off one client, and you wonder how that is allowed to happen.
I agree. Let me say this. You said that there were multiple judges involved with this scandal. So we know Coffey. You said Evans was appointing Coffey and knew that, that he... So who else?
What I meant by that is there were a lot of active judges who requested Coffey when they had access to this public document that said basically he should not be assigned. And the list is really long. I mean, I wouldn't say it was every judge, but it was dozens of names, you know, including Judith Wells, who's a family court judge. So I mentioned her. And then right now I'm looking into the possibility that some other non-senior judges oversaw criminal cases, but it's still too early to say for sure.
From doing this kind of show, I know what it feels to be retaliated against. So have you had any type of backlash from doing the recording on this story?
Specifically, the answer is yes. It's come from the district attorney's office. But I at this point, I'll just refrain from describing it.
Wow.
But
yeah. But you have felt the wrath.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. On a very, in one way that's ongoing and very serious. That's a, you know, threat to my, my you know, liberty. But also, you know, just in general, you know, the Fourth Weekly gets treated differently than other newspapers. From the county level, the city is good. I have to say the city of Fort Worth is very responsive. The county almost never responds to our questions. So David Evans, of course, has never commented. The commissioner's court, very rarely the district attorney's office. Basically, we're blacklisted, which, I want to just emphasize it's wrong for them to do that because, you know, we're the voice of our readers. We share information to the citizens of this county that pay their salaries, and you absolutely have an obligation to speak to the citizens of this county. So I don't know, I'm not quite sure what they gain, but the type of stuff we do, we definitely get a lot of, we get blacklisted for sure.
You know what, and y'all, Fort Worth Weekly, to be honest with you, is the boldest paper right now. And I think we needed that in Fort Worth. I really do. I think in my show is similar because it comes a time when you just say, you know what, if nobody's willing to stand up, I will. And I think that's what Fort Worth Weekly is doing. And it's going to be some, you know, backlash to that. But I think overall the people are appreciating your reporting. And I think this story is going to absolutely take it to the next level. I think, in my opinion, the local advocates, activists, you know, outspoken journalists, talk show hosts, I think we all should be locking whole arms together, you know, and supporting each other because it's tough out here. And the retaliation is real in a lot of cases. And we may not always openly say it, but there's a lot of times we see these stories and our knees are knocking because of the stuff that they can do to you. Am I right?
I agree. I mean, I think Tarrant County, I hope things change. It is a county that's very retaliatory, you know, from the government. I don't think people should fear the government. You know, there's a conservative, you know, saying that I think, you know, I as a progressive-minded person really believe, which is that the people should not fear the government. The government should fear the people. And I think having a healthy fear of the people. But right now, that dynamic is so far on the side of the government right now. You know, and just the way it, you know, flaunts the rule of law when it comes to its own self-interest, you know, the way it sentences, you know, people. I noticed the district attorney's office, you know, I follow the press releases and they sentence people for 30 years for things I just don't understand the rationale. But I think, you know, right now, the dynamic is, you know, people are unfortunately afraid of the county, but I think that needs to change. And it's not going to change until people tell their story, put their lives on the line, unfortunately, until things are different, which they will change.
I think you're right. And so we want to be clear so that anybody who leaves the show understands that a retired judge is not a judicial officer until she obtains senior judge status.
Yeah, you're doing a great job. You're correct with all these things. They have to, upon retirement, reach out to the Supreme Court and request to be given this title, and there are certain qualifications they have to meet. And then the Supreme Court, you know, literally sends them this kind of, it's a document. I've seen it. It's like a little it's like a little award, or I don't know. It's like a little formal letter that says you are now a senior judge, and that at that point, and only at that point, are they what's called a judicial officer, which we basically would call a qualified judge. But they have to do that.
Okay, so
and they have to follow their oath of office.
I'm sorry, say what?
And they have to follow their oath of office with each new appointment.
Gotcha. So, Edward, are you needing whistleblowers to come forth to help you with this story?
What I would like, I guess I'm always – I'll give you my email if anyone wants it. I'll put it out there. Edward@fwweekly.com, so fwweekly.com. I have a lot of stories I'm working on. If anyone wants to email me something, I'm always happy to listen. I don't always have time to talk at length on the phone. I think the next thing that needs to happen with this story is I think that the attorneys who oversaw the defendant's cases, I would hope they would care about this. But, yeah, just more public attention and again, remembering, you know, there are a lot of people right now languishing in jail who maybe have, you know, exhausted their appeals. They think that there's no hope left, but they don't know that their judge was not qualified. No one has told them. That information can be given to them. This is something that needs to happen for there to be any, you know, faith in our judicial system. And to the extent that the powers that be ignore this and try to make it go away, that's just an example of them not understanding the basic humanity of the situation.
And let's tell them, for anybody who wants to do their own research, I think you quoted section 74.056 and 75002. Can you elaborate on those so people understand that you can go and look this up for yourself and you will understand how to present your situation and say that you know that based on this particular section that you were done wrong? I think I saw section 74.056 and 75002.
Yeah, I will. Before I mention that, I want to say people need to know how to request documents from the courts.
Mm-hmm.
People are probably familiar with what's called an open records request, which falls under the Texas Public Information Act. Mm-hmm. That's for government documents that are non-judicial. If you want emails, if you want forms, official government forms from a court, it's a whole different system called Rule 12. And what you do is you email the whoever is basically the secretary of the courtroom, and you say, I will use this language. By this email or by this letter, please find my Rule 12 request for, trying to think of the name of a document, for the order of assignment of Judge so-and-so on so-and-so date. And then they have to, you know, they basically follow the same. It's very similar to open records requests, but you cannot file an open records request with courts. So with that being said, Chapter 74 deals with the local qualification of a judge. So within the region, the judge has to fulfill certain steps within Chapter 74 that says they are qualified to be on a list that's maintained by the presiding judge of the administrative region. And that document, which people can read, outlines the steps that these judges need to take. It's a two-step process. Chapter 74 does not make you a judicial officer. You have to elect under Chapter 75 to be a judicial officer, and that requires, as I mentioned, you know, gaining that title directly from the Supreme Court. And once you have done both of those things, you can preside over a case. If you just fulfill Chapter 74, you can be on the list, but you're not qualified to be assigned to cases.
Mm-hmm. Wow. So what else do you want us to know about this particular story?
I think the biggest thing that I've learned in 6 months, I knew nothing about judges. I don't know everything now, but I know a lot. It's worth educating yourself on how the system works. And more than any other area of government, the rules that judges must abide by are hidden and worded in ways that are meant to confuse and really just, you know, they make every attempt to keep this from the general public. So the more people understand, you know, case law you know, what a judge can and can't do. You know, it'd be nice if there was a book that was published that says here are all the things judges can and can't do. That book will never be published by the government because judges have kind of a – they're kind of a hands-off, don't critique us kind of part of government. And that needs to change because of how they're behaving and how their actions are destroying people's lives. There are remedies for holding them accountable, and the first step is education and just learning about what can possibly disqualify a judge. Something as simple as that, request these documents, through the Rule 12 request. Start learning how to request documents and what you're looking at, through that process. You'll start learning more and more and more. Read Court of Criminal Appeal rulings, because that's probably the best source of information. It's the only time that you really get an insight into what is allowed and what isn't allowed. It's interesting. It's really the only window you get, unfortunately.
You said in the article that Coffey had a history of falsifying government documents and misrepresenting his title and qualifications. Really?
There was a lot. As we're digging through the documents, there were a couple times where he was requesting to be assigned to family court cases. Mm-hmm. He's never presided over a family court case. I have not found any evidence that he was. There was a lot of I'm trying to remember the details. There were a lot of errors that he made with his oath of office. For example, I haven't talked about this tonight, but you can only file your oath of office, on the first day of your term of office. You can't take the oath before. And he did that. And a lot of retired judges have made that mistake. And I'll give you a quick example of why that's wrong. So when Joe Biden was elected in November 2020, mm-hmm. Trump was still president. So Biden couldn't take the oath of office for the presidency November 29th, correct? I mean, no one would say that's acceptable because there's no vacancy. The position is not open. So these are all, they seem like small things, but they're big things. And, on appeal, they can kill a judge's authority. But you have to know what the rules are. And again, nobody's printing a playbook on these rules. And so it's just taking a lot of digging and no one's answering my questions. No school of law, wants to talk about, this stuff. It's just crazy.
Wow. For those of us who weren't following the Fort Worth Weekly, I think we should start following the Fort Worth Weekly. I've always been following you. But tell us what other stories you all are working on.
So one I want to really mention, we're doing a series called City in Crisis. And we're going to look at pretty much every area of government, not necessarily every week. I want to do that, but you're going to see this series, and it's all going to be under the banner of City in Crisis. But it's really a countywide look, and we did one on the family court, so folks can go back on our website and look that up under news. That's called Breaking Point. We did one on the juvenile courts. We did one. Family courts, I said, family courts, juvenile courts, and then we're going to do one on the district attorney's office soon, and then we're going to do one on attorney appraisal district. I know for a fact we're going to do PCC. There's a lot that's still unknown. There's a lot that's been reported, but there's a lot that's unreported on Tarrant County College. We did one on the sheriff. I sent you the link on the sheriff.
Yeah.
That was part of the series. Yeah. So we did one on Sheriff Wayborn. But we're going to just do a clean sweep of government in Tarrant County and focus, really drill down on one area of government with an emphasis on exposing malfeasance on the part of our government. So that's something I hope people will follow. Should be interesting.
Wow. So how do people support the Fort Worth Weekly?
We're honestly just grab our newspaper and read it, you know, because, you know, we're funded from advertising, so we love it when people, you know, grab the newspaper and read the stories and see who's advertising with us. We have a lot of fun, you know, ads, you know. Visit our website, you know, fwweekly.com. And you know, read our content. We're on Instagram as well. You can interact with us at Fort Worth Weekly on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. But yeah, our website, you know, just look under news. We have feature stories. We have Metro and we have Static. I want to mention our Static section is really our editorial section. And so when you read Static, you're reading an opinion column. And some people don't understand that, and they get mad at us for using opinion language. But we always disclose our opinion pieces as separate from our straight reporting. So, thanks for asking.
No problem. Fort Worth Weekly has been around how long?
26 years.
Whoa. Really?
Oh, yeah.
I don't know why I thought y'all were new. I didn't know that. Wow. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't know why I thought it was going to be, let's say, 4 or 5 years. I did not expect that answer. Wow.
Well, that's okay. As long as it caught your attention at some point, that's all that matters.
Yeah. Well, right now, I think you all are doing the hottest reporting. And basically, I think when you read the Fort Worth Weekly, you don't feel like it's bought and paid for. You don't feel like it's filtered. You really feel like it's a newspaper that they're telling you their honest opinion about the story.
Yeah.
You don't feel like somebody bought the writer.
Yeah, I appreciate that. We're independently owned. I can tell you as a reporter that I'm never told what I can and can't write. We actually seek out, you know, stories that are I don't know if controversial is the right word, but the kind of things that people might stray away from, you know, like questioning the authority of judges, right? They're really, no one else is doing that, but we love going into those stories and, you know, doing it in a kind of aggressive, you know, reporting kind of way, always with the interests of our readers in mind, right? So we're always trying to, you know, do what's best for, you know, teaching our readers about what's going on in their county, in the biggest ways, you know, possible. And, you know, unfortunately, right now we're at a time in Tarrant County that's, you know, very troublesome, you know, as far as how the county's, you know, behaving. And we have, you know, some churches that are engaging in political activity, which is, you know, harmful to this country as well. We hope folks are paying attention, you know, to local government, because if you don't, you know, you may end up with a fake judge overseeing you and you don't even know it.
Absolutely. Let me ask you this. Do you all get some bad mail sometimes? Some hate mail?
Oh, my gosh. Read our comment section. Yeah, people get all kinds of hate comments. Yeah, you know, it's funny. My editor will send me the emails that are nice. He probably doesn't send me the ones that are, you know, people are pissed off at us, you know. That's part of the job. It does not bother me. I think any journalist would say that when you're ruffling feathers, you're doing a good job. You know, we're not out here to be the PR, you know, the PR wing of, you know, what's going on. You know, everything's not okay, you know, and we're not going to pretend that everything's going okay in Tarrant County. So we're digging up stuff that, you know, makes people upset. You know, we're exposing, you know, racism in our county, and we're doing it in a way that's unapologetic because we care about this community.
Wow. Well, okay, Edward, in final comments tonight, what would you tell our audience before you get out of here tonight?
I would just say stay engaged with what's going on in our community. I know it can be tiresome. Maybe I'm like you, Carrie, sometimes, because I know so much about what's going on in this community, and I see so many people that, you know, I'm not trying to fault them, but so many people are just living in this happy bubble, you know, where they're going to get their latte and taking selfies, and it just drives me crazy because you know, we are our brother's keeper. You know, there are people who are facing injustice, and it's our job to care about them and to understand that, you know, as you said, you know, an injustice anywhere is an injustice everywhere. I think this life is not meant to just be about, you know, pleasures and what we can do, you know, for ourselves. I think we need to be informed about what's going on. When an injustice happens, I think it's okay to be, you know, morally outraged when you see it. And then just keep caring about this community and this country. So however you do that, listening to this, you know, podcast or reading the paper or going, you know, watching the commissioner's court meeting, mm-hmm. all those things, you know, make government more accountable and our society more equitable.
I agree. Y'all, that was Edward Brown with the Fort Worth Weekly. I suggest y'all follow that. Follow him and the articles that he covers and the Fort Worth Weekly in general, because they're really doing some great work. Thank you for being with us tonight, Edward. I really appreciate it. You're revealing all these things that we did not know about what's going on in our court system.
Thank you for what you do. Your show is amazing. I'd be honored to be back on at some point in the future.
Oh, we're going to call you back. Thank you, Edward. Listen, he has definitely got to come back. Y'all, listen, we thank Edward Brown for stopping by tonight. We thank you, the audience, for listening. Tell a friend, tell a neighbor about the show. We typically air every Friday night from 7 to 9 p.m. Tonight, like we said, we did this out of regular rotation because Edward was not available tomorrow night, and we did not want to wait a whole week to get this story out there. Also, if you have a business, a church, a product, or a service, and you need publicity, consider advertising right here on Let's Talk Fort Worth. You can also sponsor the show if you like. You can drop me a line at letstalkfortworth@aol.com, and I'd love to talk to you about it. Also, if you have an idea for a show, drop me a line, again, at letstalkfortworth@aol.com. That's letstalkfortworth@aol.com. You know, y'all, I'm going to date myself a little bit, but, you know, Carol Burnett, this has been a great show to me, y'all. And so Carol Burnett used to sing a song at the end of her show, and it says, "I'm so glad we've had this time together." So listen, I am so glad Edward stopped by tonight and dropped all those jewels with us tonight. So listen, until next Friday night, because we're not going to be on tomorrow night because we did a show tonight. So next Friday night, we'll be back from 7 to 9 p.m. We'll see you then. Bye-bye.